America. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Perfect.
ACRA.
Thank you.
Oh, honey, I just heard some terrible news.
What's that, honey?
The radio station WGXC is going off the air.
Oh, my goodness. Did you know you could donate by check? Give them a check to WGXC 5662 Route 23, ACRA, New York, 12405.
And you can also go to their website, wavefarm.org or wgxc.org, and donate monthly, a sustaining supporter.
Oh, I'll be a sustaining supporter, honey, once we get up to that St. Charles Hotel.
Oh, yes, I love the bar there.
There's no bar there.
That's what I meant.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai's Light Into Night, an annual benefit auction, 6:30 p.m. Saturday, September 15th at the Studio Barns of Art Omai in Ghent, New York. Featuring a rustic food hall-style meal presented by the Flammery of Kinderhook and Oak Pizzeria Napolitana of Hudson, plus avant-garde happenings and innovative performances by Art Omai alumni and friends. Light Into Night also includes a silent auction throughout the evening, as well as live auctions featuring vacation destinations and monotypes by Art Omai alumni. For children, the Little Stars Party offers art making, a campfire, singing, storytelling, and more. Information at 501auctions.com/artomai or at artomai.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Purple House. I'm your host, Robert Tomlinson. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, your local community radio station. Our theme for today is new. We have five guests, all of which will be addressing the topic and issues of what's new in their life. And our first guest is the amazing Scott Petito. We're going to focus on his new jazz album, Rainbow Gravity.
Rainbow Gravity.
Yeah, I got it backwards. Hi, yes. Scott.
Well, hi.
I'm going to do a little introduction.
I didn't recognize you.
All right, here we go. Scott Petito is an award-winning composer, producer, and engineer. He's a gifted bassist and multi-instrumentalist who has performed on hundreds of recordings in many musical styles. Scott has become particularly well-known for his work in the folk and jazz genres, working with such musicians as... James Taylor, Pete Seeger, The Band, Jack Desjardins, Don Byron, and Dave Brubeck. Scott studied composition and arranging at Berklee College of Music in Boston. He has scored films for the BBC, Robert Redford, and PBS. His productions have charted in Billboard magazine and have received gold record honors. Scott composed the theme song for the NPR program With Good Reason. He's a member of the seminal political poetic rock band The Fugs. For many years, he toured and recorded with his partner, Leslie Ritter. During this period of time, the recordings received worldwide acclaim. Scott's ambient solo bass record, pronounced
Space,
debuted at the top of the NAV charts and has been played on over 450 radio stations in the United States.
I think it's 460 now.
Is it? Okay, we're up 10 more. Congratulations. A quote from the Woodstock Times. Petito has been quietly amassing an awesome body of fine work, practically creating his own subgenre of intelligent adult music. And actually, let's play a tune. Okay? Can we start? Let's play a tune. We'll start with that.
I was going to say I could leave now. I mean, pretty much covered it. So.
Okay, play. Here we go. This is track number 2 for Rainbow Gravity. Yes, more technical.
Number 2.
that's a segment of the sequence of events.
Could have faded it. No,
we don't need to fade.
It was so abrupt. I'm thrown. I don't know what to say.
Rainbow Gravity.
Yes.
Scott's new CD.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, welcome. Great to have you here.
Welcome.
Thank you
Me.
For coming. So first of all, let's start with, in this particular CD, you are the producer, engineer, composer, and bass player.
Yeah.
So what are the advantages and disadvantages of owning so many roles on one project? What do you like about that?
Well, generally speaking, I do it because I'm a control freak. So that allows me to control everything.
No, yeah.
I kind of mean that in that I do like having my hands in the complete process of making music. This just happens to be... But with that said, actually, I don't feel that way about this one because I have such great players with me on this that I think of it as a collaboration. And if you even look at the cover, I just include myself as one of the musicians because they're all friends of mine. Without them, I couldn't have done it. They were kind enough to spend the time on it, give me the time for it, and also make great suggestions and contributions. So without mm-hmm. that, I couldn't have done it. So even though I'm a control freak, I know when to let go and let people who know what they're doing do their job. And I think that's actually... That's the role of a producer anyway, a good producer, I hope. You're hopefully there to get the best out of the artist.
So you set the stage and then let everybody do what they do well.
Yeah, and hopefully when you hit a roadblock or when you do, you're the guy who hopefully guides people away from mm-hmm. it or knows when that's launch, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that means,
right.
you know.
Right.
Whether it's an artistic decision or if it's just let's take a break, you know. So I was lucky, you know, with this.
So in your introduction to the CD, you referenced the music of the late 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
You have quite a list. Miles Davis, mm-hmm. Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea, Mahavishnu Orchestra, and mm-hmm. Weather Report.
Mm-hmm.
So what about these artists and these bands that you find so inspiring?
Well, you know, I was a rock musician as a kid like everybody else, or I was a rock listener. I mean, I was becoming a musician. And so rock music was important to me. But those particular artists and bands at a very critical time, you know, I was either in late grade school or early high school around that time. And they influenced the direction that I was going to go in. And practically any musician here or anywhere else will tell you there's a period of your life somewhere in your early teens, mid-teens, where a lot of who you are is formed not only as a person, but your tastes, your choices in life, you know, you may expand mm-hmm. beyond that, but mm-hmm. that never leaves you.
No, I think that's true, especially with music.
Yeah, yeah.
The music you hear in your adolescence mm-hmm. stays with you forever.
And I avoided playing this kind of music for about 25 years. I left Berkeley and just, that was it. I went into pop music, folk music, every mm-hmm. other kind of music. I played some. I still wrote. I was a comp major, so I was always writing. But you know, when I started this, I realized not only that, but some of the people who are on this record were part of that period. Jack played on Bitches Brew and mm-hmm. In the Silent Way with
mm-hmm.
Miles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bob Minzer was in a group called the Yellow Jackets that was very important. There's two drummers who are in Weather Report on the record, Omar Hakim and Peter Erskine. So I couldn't avoid that because that history was already in their music. So I tried to write pieces of music that fit each of the people on the record as it came along. And it took me a while to do it. But, you know, it was always a secondary process for me anyway because I was always busy making other people's records during this making of this.
Yeah. So 9 out of the 10 songs are your own compositions.
Yep, there's one.
And I think you make a reference to writing with the specific collection of musicians mm-hmm. in mind.
Yep.
So with that, how does the song or a new song begin for you? Do you work thematically, or do you actually think, oh, Jack's going to be with me on this one, and therefore that somehow the percussion is going to be
yeah. That's probably my... On this one, yes, because this particular kind of music is so based in rhythm to begin with. I mean, there's a lot of other things going on.
Would it be fair to say... I listened to the album several times. Mm-hmm. There was always a sense of chase.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah, like
yeah,
there was a rhythm in it, like mm-hmm. you're running.
Well,
going
somewhere. What was unique about that period and time in music, and not everybody loves it, but it was considered to be the fusion mm-hmm. jazz period, and certainly was started by Miles. Weather Report picked up that banner, and lots of people after that. It led to some really bad music, like everything does. You know, you can say that about punk. You can say about practically anything. Mm-hmm. But it took the emphasis. What was the thing about rock music that was so different from the other forms of music being played at that time? Classical, jazz, everything else, was the rhythm,
the beat,
yeah, and the way the beat was played. And when they started to incorporate that together, a whole new idiom of music happened. It became electric to keep up with the volume. That's, you know, it just became more and more electric.
And people were playing in larger spaces.
Yeah, quite honestly, Miles Davis wanted to be Sly Stone.
Yeah.
In fact, the first song on the record is called Sly Fi, and it's basically my homage to Sly Stone, because I felt the same way. It's not so much that I was the biggest Sly Stone fan in the world, but Sly and Hendrix and all those people brought black music with rhythm to the forefront of our culture.
Yeah.
You know, James Brown, all of that. Mm-hmm. So that if that hadn't happened, you wouldn't have seen the evolution of this music either.
So you have parallel lives, though, because on one hand you have this fusion of jazz that interests you, then you have the world of the Fugs, which is entirely different.
As a musician, I call myself a punk musician with jazz tendencies. You know, just I really feel that way, because there's no music I don't like. You know, as you're going to talk with Liam later, we did a concert recently of all the music, William Blake, that you were there for, mm-hmm. with my friend also in the Fugs, and that has a relationship to it. But it's also we did it in the idiom that it was very simple music, very you know, primal in a way, but beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, it was more layered though than I think perhaps you're mentioning, because it seemed
I don't mean to underplay it, but yeah, it wasn't like playing, you know, over dominant 7♭5♭9 chords, you know.
Right.
So it's a different experience, and it's a different oral experience, and the focus on the lyric and everything else, lyric in this case the poetry, mm-hmm.
right.
obviously.
So specifically with this CD, mm-hmm. you and I have recently spoken about synesthesia. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you have mental visual images pertaining to color that create images for composing a song, mm-hmm. and specifically on this CD.
Yeah.
Did that occur for you?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, it's funny because I'd been aware of the phenomenon among artists and musicians, but it wasn't until I heard an interview with Pharrell, actually, on NPR a couple of years ago, and his description of what he saw when he played music, and I went, oh wow, that's what happens to me. I sort of put it on the back burner. You have a sense of color, a sense of you. Sometimes it's a change in the lighting, and I don't know if it's real or if it's in your mind, but it seems to coexist at the same time. And I think I mentioned to you once before that one of the founders of Berkeley, Lawrence Burke, studied with Schillinger, who had a method of composition based on a color wheel. And he assigned colors to the keys. And, you know, so he strongly felt there was a
But is that universal? Did your color relationship line up with his?
You know, I've never really... I'm trying to think. I think it does. I've never gone into real depth to see, like, oh, do I really think B is this color or D is blue? But I know there are at least some that I feel that way. And I definitely feel that way about certain keys. Certain sharp keys feel different to me. I don't have perfect pitch, but I can sense when I'm in a sharp key versus a flat key, even though technically and harmonically they're the same. But they're not, because the overtone series reacts in a different way. So there's all these reasons why they are different, even when they're spelled differently, but the same pitches.
Okay, final question. I'm sorry we're going to run out of time, but do you impose a schedule on yourself in terms of writing? I mean, do you pick a time every day that you know you're going to focus on that, or because you're so busy, just grab it when you
can? I have in the past. I can't as much as I used to, but I still, you know, it's funny because I was just thinking about that I'd like to go back to that and have some assigned time where I can just... I used to keep a box of ideas, literally a box of ideas. I'd write something down. Back then, I wrote everything. Now, I kind of put it on the computer. But
so you literally wrote it out and drop it in.
Literally throw it away, and then maybe in a year or 6 months, I look at it and go, oh, that's a good idea there, or that was crap. You know. Uh-huh. And then maybe a piece comes out of that, or it winds up on somebody's record as, you know, the background vocal part or something. I don't know. You know. So I don't throw anything out, but I also do a lot of things just for me. You know, so I remember my assistant used to come in and hear me playing the piano and go, why aren't you recording that? And I go, because this is me. This is for me.
This is private.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a whole collection of private recordings?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, and I, you know, I have no real desire to put them out in the world unless, for some reason, they come back and they mean something in the context of however I happen to be thinking or feeling that that point. You know, it's not an easy time to. Well, I don't think any time is an easy time to necessarily be an artist, but it's a particularly strange one now because we're not just artists; we're also we're marketers, we're videographers, we're doing the whole thing. So you know, you split your focus a lot. So I would love to get back to having my focus a little more consistently on the music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we'll see.
Scott Petito.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
And we're going to do a full hour in the new year.
Oh,
yeah?
I think you just got about as much out of me
no,
as
No, I don't think so. Okay, next up is Liam Singer. We're going to start with... So Scott's new album is Rainbow Gravity, produced by Scott himself on Planet Arts. And we're going to start off the next segment with Liam Singer's new album, Finish Him.
That's fine with me.
That was the beginning track on Liam Singer's new CD, Finish Him. Let me do a little introduction before we say hello to Liam. Pianist Liam Singer grew up in Portland, Oregon, went to college in Ohio, and then moved to San Francisco. He began writing music for the piano and, with a group of friends, founded the independent label Tell All Records, which released his debut album, The Empty Heart of the Chameleon, in 2004. His second CD, Our Secret Lies Beneath the Creek, followed on August in 2006. Since then, he has recorded and released Dyslocatia, I said that right, and Arc Iris. Mm-hmm. Now Make Your Home here in Catskill, where you co-run with Laura. Hilo, our cafe, performance, art space, and alternative community center, as I like to say. You are classically trained on the piano. You've embraced a lot of different forms of music. Liam Singer, welcome back to Purple
House. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. There's already so much press and commentary on this CD.
It's gotten a good amount of attention. I'm happy with it.
Yeah. Well, let me start with one of the things that there's a quote in here from you after, in a discussion with Jed Boudwin. I hope I've got his name right on LS, and it says, speaking about the track specifically, Singer says that he wrote in part after he, quote, fully embraced the concept of returning to an earlier love of synthesizers and electronic tone colors. Mm-hmm. I've been almost exclusively on piano and using most acoustic instrumentation for over a decade. And what had once felt like a move toward greater emotional authenticity was starting to feel limiting. It also increasingly felt out of step with the music I was actually listening to. And later on, I had committed to an ethic of trying to think less and feel more.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, let's talk. I mean, I know that as a painter and many visual artists in the studio, it's a kiss of death to think. You've got to just stop and let be in the present and have an emotional response to things.
Yeah, and even if you're not overthinking stuff, I think there's just, you know, there's both an intellectual and a physical approach when it comes to music. I mean, when I listen to, you know, those records from beginning to end that you listed, the first albums I was releasing, they're really conceptual and they have almost no low end and no no drums, which now seems really silly to me. But at the time, it didn't even occur to me to have low end and to have a strong rhythmic component, because there was so much I wanted to achieve just on the conceptual level, and that just means a lot less to me now.
So low end means bass and drums.
Yeah.
You're talking about percussion,
yeah,
drums.
Yeah, stuff that you feel.
So Nest of Nerves, which I think is the first track on the CD. May I read some lyrics?
Yeah.
I've seen some people glow like gods. I've watched them drown in fear, but most just disappear. Screw the soul and tame the brain till nothing strange remains. And with no friction, there's no flame, just the fiction of your name, which you expect to stay the same within the shifting of an ever-changing field. Feel your flesh against my skin. I see a beast released within. There's just one story that we tell forever. Let's tell it again. And the moment that I lose control, I feel the most awake. So then again, I hear that as think less, feel more.
Absolutely. There's, I think in this record, intentionally amplified sense of teen angst almost that I was returning to at a later time in my life. I mean, in my listening habits, I was going back to those records that I connected with in high school that have sort of darker themes. And
can you give us some examples?
I guess, you know, like Nine Inch Nails, or some, you know, even I was into 80s music a lot in high school, Depeche Mode and stuff like that. Just records that sort of have simultaneous fun with and pay homage to the fact that you might be going through something difficult, but you know, turn it into sort of a beautiful aesthetic experience. Mm-hmm.
So the title, Finish Him, that's easily interpreted in two very different ways.
Sure.
Finish Him.
Or more,
yeah. But I heard it as Finish Him as complete him. Mm-hmm. It could be self-reflection. Mm-hmm. Or Finish Him could be Finish Him Off.
Yeah.
Which then relates to the song The Devil. Mm-hmm. Which is it for you?
Well, it's partly a reference to the video game Mortal Kombat, which was part of my high school experience as well, going back to that teen angst thing. And it is a phrase that flashes on screen before you kill another character, but it always stuck in my head for the reason that you mean, because it means to kill and complete at the same time. And in a video game, in fact, you don't really die; you're born again and keep going. So the idea of creation and destruction, and just sort of the image in the video game, the character sort of standing there swaying in this sort of liminal state. On the brink. And I just connected to all of that in terms of the themes on this record.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider doing an album without lyrics? I mean, the lyrics seem so important. But
I've actually, that's been running through my mind in the past week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why the last week?
I don't know, except that I've been, releasing this album has sort of given me occasion to revisit my previous work, and I just had the thought that it would be fun to approach an entirely instrumental record. Also, I mean, I really am proud of my lyrics, but they don't come naturally. Mm. Music comes naturally. Lyrics I have to really work for.
Does a song start with the music first? Or is it
almost always.
Almost always. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. I'm curious about how you compose. So you and Laura run this very, very busy, great cafe, bar, performance space, Hilo. Mm-hmm. When do you make time to do this? Or do you give yourself a structure of a routine that allows you
to do this? A lot of this record was written previous to opening Hilo. Since we opened Hilo, the first year or so was total chaos. There was no structure in our lives at all, and I didn't write anything. And I'm just now returning to a bit of structure in my life. And I do make weekly times to sit down at the piano and am coming up with new ideas. But there was a good year where I was not only because of time constraints, but I was totally out of the mindset that I need to be in to create, which is sort of a more driftless, receptive mindset and not a let's get stuff done.
There are so many artists that are circumstantially forced into a kind of lifestyle where you have a constant coming and going. in your studio practice. And
sure.
It's a rarity, but this is the great thing about residencies, where you get to go somewhere and just focus on your work.
Yeah.
But so that you're planning on giving yourself a structure to guarantee yourself
some
solo time.
Yeah, it's definitely happening again. But it really felt like I was putting one part of myself on hold to achieve something else.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the devil for a second, because again, this is another quote. This is, an interview with Brody Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes, on the devil from his album Finish Him, Liam Singer seeks to better understand this creature in both the physical and metaphysical sense by using them as a metaphor for his own battle with depression. Singer begins by reflecting on the tragedy of fallen angel known as Lucifer. So let's start there, but let me just read the first stanza, if I may, so we can ground this in the conversation. Loneliness is the devil. The devil used to be an angel, and for the sake of his freedom, he fell from everyone around him. Loneliness is the devil. And from a fruit, he spoke to people. You learned to hide when you were naked, and how to lose a thing you love. That's cool.
Thanks.
That's pretty cool.
But
yeah,
okay,
I mean,
loneliness is a devil. So let's talk about that.
Well, I think the reference in the article to battle with depression is a bit heavy-handed. I don't consider myself someone with clinical depression, but I have gone through depressing parts of my life. This was written during one.
Uh-huh. And it started with the music? Or is this one that started with the lyrics?
This is actually one of the rare ones that started with lyrics.
Yeah.
And I remember writing them, too. I was going on daily runs because when I am depressed, that has helped a lot in my life to run every day. And the lyrics sort of began popping into my head as I was running.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you keep a journal? Do you keep track of things? And
very sporadically, but I'm not good with routine.
So where do you see music in general? If you even think about this, in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, I mean, things have changed so much in the last 10 years. Do you have a sense of where music in general might be going for our culture?
Well, I mean, my own work feels set apart in a way. It's very personal, and that's not to say it's autobiographical, but it's very much this thing that I do that's entirely based on my own strange musical likes and dislikes. I'm not really trying to please anybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, I write in my room with my headphones on a lot of the time. It's just personal, and compounding that is the fact that I really am more interested for my own music and the recorded form rather than playing live. So my music has never really felt in step with what's going on in the broader culture, and I don't think that it ever will. I'm just going to kind of keep doing my thing till I die.
That's so interesting, because it seems like you're getting a lot of attention already for this.
Yeah, well, that's not... I will say that this record was intentionally poppier. Not because I was trying to move more units or whatever, but I did want to. I had a sense that I wanted to write things that were easier for people to hear. So there was definitely a sense of an audience writing these songs, but
being a communicator sometimes seems like it's not cool when you have something to say that you can say in an easy way or a commercial way. Mm. I don't want to say that word, but yeah, I know exactly what he means.
It's accessibility doesn't have to be an evil word.
Exactly.
You know.
It's a communication, really.
Yeah.
It's a way to find
it. No, well, and I think if you're talking about broader cultural trends, it's never been cooler to be a pop musician. I mean, you know, the underground music websites are routinely reviewing big pop records now, which you didn't see at all 10 or 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that there's a sense of selling out or anything like that if you're trying to do something catchy. But
I'd like to ask both of you this question, both Liam and Scott. What was your response when Kendrick Lamar won the 2018 Pulitzer Prize for music for his album Damn?
I loved it.
Yeah,
loved
same.
It?
Yeah,
that
because what does that mean to you?
Well, for me, it was I like to believe, although it's getting harder, I still like to believe that at the top of pop music is still the pinnacle of art. I think that there's something, because generally speaking, those people are communicating, the people who are involved in that level of pop music are communicating with most people. You know, they just are. They just have a huge audience. So when they can reach a point where they can combine whatever the latest style or trend of music is with a message that works, to me, that's the ultimate. I mean, the Beatles did it. You know, all you need is love. That's, I mean, and obviously many other groups did too. But when you get to the point where you can say almost anything and make it popular, that's like
totally.
That's about as good as it gets. Yeah. And to me, that's what Kendrick Lamar did. Uh-huh. But it goes deeper than that too, because he's also churning up the waters. You know,
right?
Yeah, I mean, the gesture felt slightly awkward. Yeah. Obviously, given that there's this huge leap from the tradition of what they've given the prize to him, it feel, you know, it's shocking and feels somewhat. It's easy to attribute it to trying to make up for lost time or something. But yeah,
same with Bob Dylan,
right? Exactly. But the fact is, I 100% think that he deserves it. He's an incredible musician, and in fact, I read interviews with the two composers who lost out, who spoke of how his music has influenced their work. Right, you know, he's a great musician.
I read an interview with a classical composer that didn't get it and was thrilled that he got it and was actually honored to be in the same category as him.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's a wonderful thing. So good. Well, I'm glad to hear your reactions as musicians and composers. Okay, we're going to do a mic switch. Cassidy and Matt are going to go up. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Liam,
Thanks
for being here. It's great to have you on the program, and I hope we'll do that again soon. So, you're listening to Purple House, a monthly forum for the arts in Greene County. This is WGXC 90.7. I'm your host, Robert Tomlinson. Next up, it's so great to have both of you here. This is Cassidy and Matt.
Good to be here.
Let me turn the mic.
They're loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
Yes.
Okay, so I could take 20 minutes each doing your bios, but let me try and give a quick over here. Matt Boa makes small-scale improvised buildings, hand-built people museums, and roadside attractions. Oh, my God. There's so much that we could talk about with you and all the things that you've done. Well, let's mention that you've recently done this amazing Rip Van Winkle sculpture at the top of Main Street. We also want to make sure that we give credit to the Greene County Council for the Arts for support and funding for that endeavor.
Definitely.
Which is wonderful, of course. Let's see. I actually want not neglect to mention your book On the Walls, because I think that's just an incredible historical document for us. And the title, remind me of the title of that book.
Talking Walls.
Talking Walls. Thank you. Yes. I've got it sitting
longer
on my
longer subtitle,
table.
Casting Out the Post-Contact Stonewall Building Myth.
Cool.
Yes.
All right. So let's see. It says here you have two public works. The one is the Rip that we've mentioned, called the Awakened Rip Sculpture, which is at Main Street and Summit. And then you have something under construction in Prattsville, which we'll talk about at the Prattsville Art Center. Cassidy.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome. So glad to have you here.
Great to
Okay.
be.
So what should we say about you? Again, a list of a mile long of incredibly exciting, interesting things that you do. Let's see. So you have a proven track record of creating successful characters, developing valuable content for large audiences, garnering significant popularity and gaining global press access. Under her past character, Lizzie West, your music was featured in movies and on TV, as well as being played at length on the radio. You've toured a lot. You've had your own successful career as a singer-songwriter and headlined for other folks. Yeah. It says here you're best known for your song, Chariots Rise, 2003 film, Secretary. Wow. I know that you're doing a really great play. Is it fair to say play?
Yeah, it's a musical project.
It's a
multimedia project, but there is a stage aspect to it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Well, enough of the formal introductions. And first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
You just got married. So,
yeah,
I know.
Radio.
How about that? That
is
down in North Carolina.
Yeah?
Yes.
Went down to the courthouse.
Yeah.
Got ourselves hitched.
Why North Carolina?
That's where I'm from. Yeah. My folks were down there. And
the girls.
Luis and,
And so both of you have daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're not only great friends, but now they are sisters.
Officially.
Are they totally happy?
They're so excited.
I'll bet they are.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
So where should we jump in here? Let's talk about Prattsville. Should we talk about that?
Sure.
I know you're both involved in each other's projects as well as live, so join in here. So Prattsville, that's with Nancy Barton and the Prattsville Arts
Center. Yeah, the forest called Nancy Barton, who I guess after Hurricane Irene bought this decrepit mud slung building and started turning it into an art center, and
it's the old mom and pop hardware store.
Yeah.
Which gives it total flavor and beauty, I think. It's great.
Yes. So and I guess she had seen my Catamount People's Museum that was on Bridge Street in Catskill for 2010 to 2017. So I started going out there and helping her with the Halloween event where, you know, the kids and the older people, we would make so called a haunted house. And I built something out of some of the hardware store material that was there. I called it the Prankster People, or I called it the Prankster Reading Room, because Zadok Pratt, you know, turns out he was sort of a prankster, where he would get dressed up in full winter gear and have his dogs pull him around on a sled, you know, the middle of the heat wave in the middle of the summer. So the tanning baron, you know, Zadok Pratt, interesting. I think her name's Carolyn that runs the Zadok Pratt Museum. But she was kind of like, why is Zadok Pratt involved with the Prankster People's Museum that I'm building? Shaped like a coyote head. I was like, what? I was hoping I was going to get a lot more out of you, but, you know, I gave her the reference out of this gazetteer, Arthur Adams, gazetteer of Catskill. But she didn't really know that reference at all. So,
I should mention that Carolyn ran and worked at the Catskill Mountain Foundation, is a great literary force in many capacities. And she's been on the program before.
And she's the president.
She's now the director of the
Zadok Pratt Museum, which is a couple of doors down. So I went and worked, and it's looking like a Native American coyote head, the classic trickster figure. So I'm really delving into that aspect of what is the trickster as like an adversary in our own life. I mean, interesting enough, you know, we talked about the devil. He was at one time the adversary. You know, Jung was commenting on the answer to Job, because Job was the good man, and then, you know,
the sacrificer.
Well, that was Abraham, kill me a son, you know, Highway 61. But Job, the good man that was just trying to be so good, and then, you know, God sends down just the forces just to wreck his life, you know, just to see if he can hang on, you know, like, man. But the trickster figure, I found a great Joseph Campbell, you know, quote where he was like, Yahweh is actually the greatest kind of trickster we have. You know, it's a male. It's he's a gender. He calls it messing with programs? I don't know. So I'm kind of mixing my Gnostic research with that. But we're also going to be doing workshops on even how to look at the dark side, or look at the adversary, and that we're calling it trickster love and how to become whole. So maybe I'll pass it over to Cassie.
It's super inspiring to witness Matt's work and to witness what's happening in Prattsville. And also, I mean, Nancy is an incredible force, so we're very thankful to her for
giving us
the opportunity.
Nancy is so fantastic.
Just to witness and watch how a one-woman show is just whirling through that.
But she has also sort of single-handedly taken what was a complete disaster and rebuilt a town around it.
Yes.
With nerves of steel and great humor and grace. Yes. I mean, she's just wonderful.
Which is a great way to go into the trickster in the way that we're approaching it. So, first of all, October is going to be dynamic, because we're going to be in Prattsville every weekend teaching together Friday nights and Saturday mornings. So it's sort of Nancy's working on creating a kind of overnight experience at the Art Center. And we'll be teaching.
So this is every weekend in October,
from
Friday night and Saturday.
Friday night and Saturday mornings. So people will come and we'll have a workshop, we'll have a dinner, we'll have a fire, and we'll have a breakfast in the morning. And as Matt mentioned, the name of this workshop series is Trickster Love and Becoming Whole. So the purpose of the workshop is to open up the conversation about, you know, how do we approach the darkest figures in our lives and help ourselves allow them to become portals to the light. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then from that place to move forward holding that light. Mm-hmm. And I would say that Nancy's work, as you just described it, is the perfect example of that. Yeah. When we take the ripping storm that comes through our life of total destruction, and we turn it into the opportunity of maybe multiple lifetimes. So
what's your feeling about, as I think about the idea of trickster, and I'm aware of Joseph Campbell's involvement with this thematically, American culture seems to be void of a lot of significant rituals, including a place for either what we call the dark side and or the trickster.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? Why have we evolved in that way? And does that in some way play into how important it is why you're doing this?
Mm. Well, to bring our friend Carl Gustav Jung back in, he says, looking at the dark side, even in ourselves or outside, is the missing quarter of the quaternity, which he called, good, evil, male, female, light, dark, and then there was Elmer, who did the heating system in the Prattsville Art Center, and he was talking about being from El Salvador and walking. He's like, I don't believe in the supernatural, but he got, visited by the Quixote, or it was like a trickster, the white dog and the black dog, and I didn't know anything about it, but it was dragging the chain, and the elders, after his 30-mile walk after a bad argument with his dad, where he's describing this thing following him, they were like, that's that supernatural, that was the white dog or the black dog. But he's like, I wonder why people in America don't see it. And we've another quote from somebody is like, you can push the paranormal and the supernatural out of your perception, but it doesn't necessarily disappear. It just grows stronger. So if you disbelieve that there's, evil forces at work trying to, take us off our sane and proper course to derail us, then you're disempowered. So you can't even face it and then know what to do with it.
Right.
Yeah. I think if we, if a society is created where people are afraid of their own shadow, which ultimately the trickster is within us, so if we're afraid of our own shadow, then we're disempowered to actually create the life story that we wish to live. So I think that's in some way why, to answer your question, why, because we are living in a sort of, I would call it a corporate fundamentalist regime that has an interest in keeping us all afraid of our own shadow.
Right.
And the purpose of our workshop is definitely to empower each one of us individually to understand how to open up that Pandora's box and to dance with our shadows in one way or another so that we can fully empower and creatate, which is the work of my life, create our reality, create our world, create our story in a way that allows us to take back our collective tale and become whole. So
great. So couple things about this specific project before we move on. Is the sculpture finished, the coyote thing, or is it a work in progress?
It is definitely a work in progress. I got most of the exterior done and some of the interior, but now it's time to, the People's Museum is like filling it with the stories, whether it's Elmer's story, which I didn't know about, the El Salvadorian, supernatural black dog, white dog thing, or I didn't know about, somebody else gave me some others. There's trickster myths all over the world. And So by October 30, 2026,
that's the party, right?
It will be finished.
Yeah. So, but typical or true to how you work, there is a community involvement in this creation of this piece.
Definitely. And
will the workshops be contributing to that as well?
Yeah, I was just going to chime in about that because I think people will be watching Matt work over the course of the month. And again, as you say, that is the way that Matt works, and I think the way we both work, that the process is sort of the point that we want to engage people in the process of creating sculpture and creating life and creating our story. So people will come, we'll study together, open up that conversation together. We'll be looking at our own trickster and very much learning in our own way about ourselves as well, mirroring one another. And the information that we all garner in those workshops will also be put on display, I think, in the gallery is what we're talking about. And then it will feed ultimately into a finished work that will be fully revealed on the 26th at a kind of prankster ball.
Nice.
I think it's going to be great.
Will there be a book? Are you going to document this in a way that there perhaps could be a book?
I mean, more and more. I mean, I love the material. I love making zines. Printing things up that can be revisited
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, there will definitely be, I would imagine, a workbook out of the workshop that will allow people to do this work at home.
Oh, that's exciting.
And then meet us next time we're yeah. making
Or travel
available.
To other communities. Yeah, right. Have a life of its own.
Absolutely.
So if they want to find out about this, I assume you can go to the Prattsville Arts Center website.
Yes, it's all getting posted this week. So okay. just stay Good. Tuned. And Good. Also, you know, our web presence will be being kind of refined and presented over the next two Great. Weeks. So you'll be able to find us and we'll make that available Cool. through you and through other channels. Yeah. yeah.
So let's segue into our next guest, Jennifer Dubois.
Yeah.
Because I want to hear about camp
okay,
now because there is,
I felt bad that
this
we
is
didn't
a really exciting
that
thing that you're going to do together. Let's bring Jen in. Hello, Jen.
Talk about a one woman powerhouse.
Yeah, that's right. Our local powerhouse.
Yes.
Welcome. So I'm going to do an official introduction for you in a few moments.
Okay.
But if you'll join in, I'd love to have you be part of this conversation sure. where we're going to focus on camp now. Tell us about the collaborative effort you're going to do at the community center.
I'll start. All right. So Matt and I are creating a pop-up shop together. It's a sort of hybrid of an art installation, gift shop, coffee shop, tiny venue. I say coffee shop, but actually it's a sustenance shop. So I'll let Matt talk about that, like what we mean by sustenance, but just people kind of comprehend coffee house better than at this point. But it's going to be a great space that Jen has made possible. So we'll talk to Jen about that and how
and when will this start?
Exciting it is. So it's going to take place September through December, and it's a proof of concept. So, of course, we're excited to make it work and then bring it back fully
you
next
said September,
year.
So it hasn't started yet, though.
It hasn't started yet. So September 15th is our introduction okay. session, like our sort of introduction to the concept and kind of sign up for people to get involved and be part of the process. Again, that's our mm-hmm. work, is we want to engage the community in the sure. process of creating. And so September 15th will be an introduction to the concept, but it'll also be a show, a performance. Jen's going to perform. I'm going to perform. Our
Great.
New Bua family band is going to perform.
Right, right.
It's going to be really fun, but it'll also be a presentation of the concept and a kind of calling in, calling all comrades. This is a cooperative concept
nice.
Where people can actually end up sharing their goods and also helping to run and organize the space. So it's
Great.
Going to be exciting.
So when you said signing up, this is exactly what you're referring to then, to
yeah.
sign up to participate.
Yes,
and
exactly.
you can do that through the community center
you,
website?
You can do that starting September 15th with us, and
okay.
we'll present the kind
so
of
So that will
the
be
ways.
A grand opening event.
And then, so November 11th is the grand opening event. Ah. So we'll basically spend 2 months with the community building, but you'll still be able to come in, get a coffee, get some sustenance, which I want to hand it out to Matt.
Yeah.
And so, but you'll be able to witness our process, help our process, even add to our process, and the community center students will be studying with us the process.
Cool.
Anyway,
okay, Mr. Sustenance, Matt.
Sustenance.
Mr. Sustenance.
No, we were searching for a word that, you know, wasn't quite just coffee house, but
yeah.
at the same time, something that's wholesome stuff. I mean, I've always dreamed of, you know, we have something that's going to be on Sundays, soup songs and solidarity. I mean, I love making big batches of soup out of, you know, the overstocked Story Farms vegetables or whatever people have, whether it's the community garden that Michelle from Pistol Whip has created or whatever.
He's going to bring his bread.
Yeah. You know, so all these things just like, so it's like a hearty soup that feeds many people because uh-huh. you know we all know it's hard to cook something awesome for yourself, but it's a lot easier to cook something awesome and wholesome for other people. So that's just the beginning. And what else besides that? I mean,
the maple water.
Yeah, we have a lot of. I make a lot of maple syrup. You know, whether we you know add that to the mm-hmm. thing. You know, we have a bunch of lemons. You know,
so do you, the community center to me one of the most, and we'll talk more about this when we're just on mic with Jen only, but. It's such a great place that young people go to, especially the kids that are, you know, in high school, the sort of 15 to 18 year olds. Are they going to be part of this? Have you figured out a way to connect with them in this capacity?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, a lot of who we've been seeing right now are even a little bit younger than that. And we want to kind of continue to expand that and move into, you know, an intergenerational realm where we're all just there and we're all just hanging out together and doing the thing, you know,
right.
being a community. So that's one of the things. Yes, we have had some of our young people who were in that bracket working on some writing and looking into some journalism. And we just got an awesome scholarship from our Rotary, which was going to allow us to send two young people to Cornell for career exploration. So some of that
wow.
might include some of the, you know, some of the kinds of things we've been working on mm-hmm. with them there. And it's just it's a place for it's a place for people to come and do what they want to do.
Okay, let me pause because I haven't done my official introduction for Jen Dubois, and I want to make sure because you know there might be one or two people that don't know who you are.
Been here a few times.
Strangers. Jen Dubois splits her time between freelance creative pursuits and community development, working as an educator, coach, advisor, and consultant for many years in Greene and Columbia counties. Most recently running programming and outreach for the Catskill Public Library. Before taking on the role of the executive director of the Catskill Community Center, which is 2 months ago, is that right?
Just about.
About 2 months. Yeah. She's raised in Greene County. She's a local. Jen is proficient in several world languages and holds a degree in Spanish language and literature from Salisbury University, where she also designed her own secondary course of study in visual and performing arts. She furthered her practice of guitar, percussion, and voice while living in Spain and continues to study, write, and perform in multiple languages. Collaboration is a strength and passion for Jen, and she hopes to draw upon these connections to help spread the ripples of growth and community far and wide directly at the community center. Wow.
I'm not becoming emotional. I'm just, my eyes are burning for some reason right now.
I thought it was the way I read
it.
Yes, sorry.
Your delivery.
Darn.
Of my life.
I know the delivery. It was when we got to several languages.
Collaboration.
I didn't realize you were multilingual. That's wonderful.
Yes, well, you know.
That's cool.
It's a long life. You got to get around.
Are we going to do different languages at the community center? Is that a possibility?
We have been talking a little bit about that kind of stuff. And one of the things, I mean, like Christy Gibson from Magpie, and I've talked for a long time about having just a chance to gather and practice. You know, those of us who do speak other languages don't really often get a chance to practice. And it's kind of one of those things.
And those of us
sharp.
That would like to learn another language.
And then people could just drop in. So those kinds of things, sure, would be part of what we would do.
So what's towards the top of your list? I know you've only been there 2 months, but a lot of things have changed.
We're just right now we are taking serious inventory. I'm doing a lot of listening, kind of hearing what people want to do, what people would like to see happening, and what, you know, kinds of things they miss or what kind of ideas people have. Like I said, just trying to get a feel for where everyone wants to go together and just say, yeah, let's try it out. So
you're going to try and engage seniors, right? As well as young folks.
Everybody come. And I think the camp now is a great opportunity for that because we'll be, you know, getting together, even just getting together weekly for a meal. That was something that our youth director, Adam Billingsley, he's talked a bit about wanting to revive they used to do community meals quite a bit and just wanting to bring that back and have people come through to, you know, there's something about just sitting around a table together the nature of what happens there, the sustenance, the communication, you know, the slowing down enough to hear one another and talk and be there, that kind of fosters a lot of connection and growth.
Yeah, and there's so much wisdom that needs to be imparted from our wisdom keepers. So I think intergenerational is key. They're, you know, for the most part, familiar with their own trickster, and they can help us understand how to work with what's going on in our world and find the light, hold the light.
There is something universally magnificent about making food together, right? And eating. And locally, Christy, that you've mentioned, last winter did a Stew's Days, you know, for a handful of people that showed up. And it was always a really special thing to pause on a Tuesday, late afternoon, head over to the bookstore. We're talking about Magpie Books.
Yeah.
And have a meal together and just what's going on, you know? It's a very special thing that builds community in a really local, quiet, but very caring way. You know?
And it's always, you know, you'll just see the common threads that run together or the coincidences that come about. And they're not coincidences at all, really. They're just how we are aligned. And you'll, you know, end up seeing someone that says, oh, I was thinking about this. And then, oh, funny, my friend just said that yesterday. I should connect you to it. And this, you know, one thing leads to another, and that's how things happen.
Maybe we should add another S. Synchronicity. Soup, songs, and solidarity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just kind of getting together and seeing where we can connect on things.
Sweet.
Our intention.
What's happening with the farmers market?
Farmers Market, we get a couple more Good Fridays. It's down at Dutchman's Landing Park every Friday from 4 to 7. So we are looking at wrapping up these next couple weeks in advance of our Farm to Table Dinner, which is our big celebration of a great Farmers Market season and community center fundraiser for the year. We're just trying to make people aware that that's going on.
And please tell us, we can't mention prices, but we can mention when and where that is.
That is at the Point on the 21st, Friday the 21st of September, and folks can get information on that on our website. There's an event page on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, if they want to dig a little deeper and find that out.
So when you were getting close to being offered this job, and then as soon as you were offered this job, what privately seemed incredibly daunting about it to you? Was there anything that struck you like, oh my God, I've got to, and then fill in the blank?
I gotta have the money. I mean, that's the thing. There is no shortage of people who want to come out and participate and do a thing or help or offer their, you know, ideas, mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm, you know, blood, sweat, and tears to it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's a giant building in the middle of the village, and it even just to turn on the lights, you know,
we have a basketball court inside that building too.
We have a basketball court. We have a stage. We have a kitchen that is fast becoming a community kitchen.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We have recently moved a wall and are increasing our game room space. We have a game room. We're putting in a media center upstairs, looking at putting in a music classroom, reviving some of the drum and bugle corps instruments. And
a drum and bugle corps?
Yes, yes. There was a drum and bugle corps in Catskill for a long time, and we still have all of that stuff. So my first step, the thing that's not daunting, is just the digging through the treasure trove of resources and all the things that are there, and just kind of getting excited about the potential and what we could do with what we already have. Just not letting things sit and collect dust, just digging them out and letting them shine. So that's
fun. So let's evolve into that. So the opposite of daunting, I guess, might be the joyous opportunities. What struck you when you were offered the job and you said, oh, this is great because I'll get to
say yes.
Fill in the blank after saying
I'll get
yes.
to say yes. Yes. I'll get to be the one who says, sure, we can try that. Yeah, we have a space for you. Yeah, we might have some stuff. Sure, we have some materials. Yeah, there are two basements full of
okay,
whatnot.
You're hearing it here on Purple House, ladies and gentlemen. Get your list request ready and submit it to Jen Dubois, who is going to say yes.
I can try.
That's wonderful.
I have a wonderful board of directors who've been very supportive and just said, you know, we're here for most anything you want to do. Just ask us, let us know what you need, and go for it. So,
are you working with the public schools? I know last year there was some programming before and after school.
Yeah, tomorrow our before school program is beginning at the elementary school. We do have little child care resource, which is great for people who need to who work further away and need to kind of get out of town
Details so they could actually drop off kids for preschool activities.
That kind of stuff would be on our site too, or there'll be registration forms coming home from school. We have them at the center, but it's I believe the 7:15 to 8:30, so just in about an hour before school starts. If people need to get on their commute, we have a place for their children.
Oh, that's wonderful! And after school.
After school, we have our programming at the center as usual. We got a lot of stuff going on. Like I said, we've got different revamped spaces. We have Cassidy and Matt looking to, you know, get some kids excited about working on different stuff, learning some workshopping. We'll be kind of, that's why I like thinking of them as pop-up art installations, because we'll be making a lot of the things together and then doing a lot of workshopping together and demonstrating how to do these things and build these skills.
Goes from business to art installation to making, you know, upcycled undies. Yeah. Who knows?
what are you interested in? Is it the entrepreneurship angle? Is it the art angle? Right. Is it, you know, what do you want to do? Right. Are you cooking? Are you trying to, you know, yeah, let's do it. We'll find a place for it.
And something that's a little dear to my heart, the idea of a library.
Yes, yes. So we have...
You can start your own collection.
Our first space to have a little love was the gallery space, which today we are having the installation of the Parasol Project. Robert Berg is there from the Art at Leeds Gallery, and we will be the proud home of the Parasol Project in our gallery.
And what is that? So we have one minute left. Please tell me.
Please go to the Art at Leeds site to see a little bit more about that. Artists from Burma have hand-painted these parasols, and they benefit Burmese health. So they will be living at the community center at least through springtime as our ceiling in the gallery, which is also our new library. We got some shelves going in there. People can bring books down if they want to, and we'll
And the library, is there a focus to the library? Obviously, it's a resource library for people that use the community center.
Yeah, I'd like to see some local history stuff go in there, you know, different things. Rotating, obviously. It's not a huge space.
I know someone who wrote a great book on the local walls.
Oh, we might be able to get one of those, maybe.
Not only that, you can go check out the walls with him.
Perhaps have an event. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's sweet.
All that.
So we have library, after-school programs, before-school.
Field trips. Yeah, looking at getting out there, doing some stuff. We've been talking to Jeff Vincent from Catskill Mountain Wild, some of our friends at the Thomas Cole House, looking at doing some paddles and
so
hikes.
So collaboration is going to be excursions. A key to this.
Oh, tremendous.
Totally.
Yeah, that's the word.
How nice. Mm-hmm.
Takes a village.
Yeah. It's great to have you in this position, especially since you're a local person, you know the community so well, and that you yourself are an active musician, singer, songwriter. This is going to, I think, bode well.